Good morning, Miss Hill. It's been a while. I was thinking back the last time I had the opportunity to teach, and I think it was December. And so if you haven't met me, my name is Joel, and I'm the executive director of Soul Roots, a spiritual formation and soul care ministry. And basically, the mission of Soul Roots is to nurture people's souls, to keep them rooted and grounded in their identity as God's worthy and beloved children. And I started this ministry in January, and how it plays out is basically I have the joy of sitting with people, helping professionals, right? So like helping professionals, doctors, nurses, teachers, ministry leaders, and then also people of color and people in marginalized communities. And these type of people experience a lot of secondary trauma or like just straight up trauma and pain. And what I get to do is sit with them and talk about their soul and how they struggle and how they need to hear from God to remind them who they are. So that's what I get to do. If you want to hear more about Soul Roots, you can find me afterwards. I love talking about it. But that's not what I'm here for. So I'm here because I was asked to speak on Matthew 5 something. I said it's been a while since I've been up here. We've been in a series called The Upside Down Kingdom. And we're walking through the book of Matthew. And in this section, it's known as the Sermon on the Mount. And we know that through the last few weeks that the world systems are a lot like the world systems that we know now. Meaning that two things are kind of dominating this world. It's the power and wealth. The kingdoms with the most power and the most wealth, the tribes with the most power and the most wealth, the individuals with the most power and the most wealth are usually the ones that are ruling and reigning the world. When we look at this passage in Matthew over the weeks, we have to remember that most of the people who are coming to this Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus has gone up to a mountainside and he's beginning to teach. Most of the people that are coming to hear him are the Hebrew people, the Israelites. And their historic narrative is that they are the chosen people of God. The whole beginning of this book, the Bible, the Old Testament, is about the chosen people of God. And then we get to the New Testament. And the chosen people of God are experiencing something that is not that great, right? They have many enemies. There's pagan nations have overrun the land. They've taken over and they have subjected the people to harsh rules and taxes. There are movements of national resistance that spring up fueled by anger and increasing wickedness, increasing injustice. And these groups start to rise up, factions, if you will, and they take things into their own hands. They begin to twist God's laws so that they can have the power and the wealth. And then even within the divisions, there's more divisions within the Jewish society where a few, have become really, really rich. And then most everybody else is poor. And then some are very, very poor. So you can imagine what it's like for these people, the chosen people, as Jesus comes onto the scene And they're looking for something. They're looking for answers. So they come and they've heard. They're listening to this young teacher who has burst onto the scene and has a revolutionary way of teaching. He speaks with authority, they say. He speaks with wisdom, they say. He's different from all the other teachers that they've heard before. So their expectation as they come to hear Jesus is that this Jesus guy, this new rabbi, is going to interpret the law and teach them how to follow God better. Because right now, whatever they're doing isn't working for them. But when they come, they're looking for detailed instructions, just like the other teachers before them were giving them. So they're coming and they're like, hey, how do I, what do I do if my neighbor breaks my wheelbarrow, right? What is the next actions I take? Or, hey, can you tell me what the best practices to slaughter a pigeon and a ram and a bull is, right? They're looking for life hacks. They're looking for, hey, tell me what to do in 5 steps. And so when Jesus shows up, he's teaching something that is totally different than what they expected. And we've seen that over the last few weeks. Vicky talked about this. When Jesus teaches them, he says that Israel isn't just chosen in order to be God's special people, while the rest of the world suffers and is in darkness. Actually, Israel is chosen to be the light of the world, to be the salt of the earth. Israel is chosen so that through Israel, this nation, God can bless all people. Their actions, their ways, the ways that they live will demonstrate the good life. And then Tim last week talked about the different way that Jesus talked and gave instruction. So as they're looking, Jesus reminds them, he says, hey, you've heard that the law says, do not murder, or you'll be subject to judgment. And Jesus takes it another level and says, hey, if you're angry with a brother, you are liable for judgment. He takes things and starts to flip them upside down. His teachings introduce a new way of living, a revolutionary way of living, a subversive kingdom, one that flips everything on its head, and that's why we call this the upside down kingdom. And so that's what we're going to look at today as we enter into Matthew 5, 38 through 41. It's a short passage, but it's packed full of just good stuff. So let's read that. Matthew 5, 38, 41. It's the first book of the New Testament, right? And the back third of the Bible. And it says this: you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go a mile, go with him 2 miles. That's it. That's all we're going to look at today. So let me be honest with you for a second. I mean, I'm honest with you for all the time, but when the teaching team asked me to teach on this passage, I opened it up and I looked. I was like, okay, I got it. I know that one, right? And I said, yeah, I know that passage. It's about like not to be vengeful and to be seeking justice. So I came in pretty confident, but when I opened up the word And I spent time with it, and I opened up a couple of commentaries and spent time with it. I realized that this isn't what I thought it was. You see, I was like the people coming to listen at the Sermon on the Mount. I was hoping for the life hack. I was hoping for, if this happens, do this. I was hoping for easy ways to know that I'm right with God. And so when you read it first through, and you read it, if someone knocks your tooth out, then you have the right to knock someone else's tooth out. If someone slaps you in the face, you have the right, or if someone slaps you in the face, give them the other cheek so they can slap that side of the face. If anyone sues you for a shirt, then give them your pants, right? If a Roman soldier tells you to carry their equipment a mile, carry it 2 miles. You read it and it sounds like, okay, if then, right? But friends, this is much more than that. What's undergirding these four verses is something totally different than just, if this, then do this. Because how many of you in your own lives would this actually be helpful instruction to? Hopefully you're not getting slapped. Hopefully you're not being sued. Hopefully you're not being asked by a Roman soldier to carry their gear for a mile. So what is it actually? What are the instructions? What's going on? These four verses are giving a clue to what God cares about. It shows us the way of Jesus, the way of living as people of salt and light, and how we can flip the system upside down by demonstrating the love of God and by blessing others. So that's what you just read. Those four verses is what we just read. And let's unpack that and look at how. Start with chapter 5, verse 28. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This phrase comes far before Jesus' time. It's a phrase that is actually found from historians and anthropologists that say, archaeologists that say it's from Hammurabi's Code, a collection of 282 laws dating back to 1790 BC. Hammurabi is the best known and most celebrated of all Mesopotamian gods, or kings. They might have thought he was a god. But he ruled the Babylon Empire. So this is rooted in culture. This phrase, this law. And what it's meant to do is say this. So if someone pokes an eye out, you can take one eye, but you can't take two. If someone punches you in the face and takes a tooth, you don't get to take three teeth. What it does is it's actually limiting and balancing justice. So you don't take excessive vengeance on somebody. That's a good thing. It's a law of justice, so you don't overstep your bounds and hurt somebody else. But Jesus says that law isn't enough. To practice control and of your vengeance, that's just not enough. He says in Matthew 5:39, but I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Friends, this isn't a verse about violence. It isn't a verse about allowing people to assault you. In this time, what he's talking about in Jesus' time is that a slap to the left cheek is actually an insult. Because if I, with my right hand, slap you on the left cheek, it's a backhand. It's a backhand. It's an insult reserved for who? As a male in that culture, if I backhand you, the person I'm backhanding is likely a slave, likely a child, likely a woman. And so this backhand is an insult. Not just an insult, but it's saying that you are not worthy of my forehand. You are beneath me. And so when Jesus says, offer the other cheek, what he's implying is, you've hit me with your backhand. Hit me again with your forehand. Treat me like an equal. Do not demean me. It's pretty graphic, right? Because the backhand is reserved for demeaning and degrading. You're an afterthought. But Jesus says, no, you are not an afterthought. Jesus' teaching illuminates the view of humanity. In Jesus' kingdom, he's not condoning violence and vengeance. He says that the world chooses violence and power. But we, in my kingdom, in God's kingdom, we choose to recognize where the power comes from. And that power comes because we are created in the image of God. You are worthy and you are beloved. And nobody treats God's creation like that. Nobody treats God's children like that. We do not do that. Basically, he's saying, if you want to power up and dismiss me, treat me like an other. Call me a savage. Call me a dog. Call me vermin. But I know that's not God's way. I know that's not how God sees me. The kingdom of God reminds me who I am. I am a child of God. I am worthy and I am beloved. And then at the same time, it also says, it reminds us that even the aggressor, even the one doing the backhand, is human. And we are not to retaliate in the same way. So it's different than an if-then statement. There's something more to it. And what I want to challenge us at the same time is this. We're a lot of times when we think and we read the Bible in the images that we create as we imagine, is we put ourselves most of the time in the victim's role, the one being backhanded, right? The one that's being offended. But the warning is just as solid for us as going, do not be the aggressor. Because actually, that's what the religious people are doing. They forget as well. And they start to power up. They start to use their wealth. They start to use their power. He says, Jesus is saying, be aware that you don't become the offender. If you are to live as people of salt and light, we resist the powering up. We resist the dehumanizing behaviors of the world. I'm often reminded of this when I go and work watch sporting events. And especially when I go with Jono and Amy Miller, we've done a lot of games together, Timbers matches and Blazer games and Beaver games. I don't know what the other team was, but we'll watch. And if you're a Timbers fan or a Beavers fan or a Blazers fan lately, it's not fun. And so I will be yelling at the TV, and I am spewing venom at the refs. I'm spewing venoms at the other team, and even at my own team because they can't get it together. That match last week. And this is my fandom, right? And then I hear Amy Miller on the side, oh, that poor guy. His mom must be feeling so bad for him. She wrecks my fandom. I'm like, are you kidding me? And she's like, he's a human. And I'm like, okay. It snaps me out of that. Because for me, when I watch sports, I forget. I forget that these are people doing their jobs, playing a game that they love. In my head, for some reason, it becomes some kind of theater, a movie. They're fictional. And so I can place them as the other. And I can say things that are demeaning, degrading, and just horrible. But the thing is, if those people were in my face, there's no way I would say that, right? I'd probably go, hey, can I get a selfie? Can we get a picture together? Like, there's no way that I would say the things I say because they actually become human when they come close up. But for me, when I'm watching, they become something else. I become something else. And so the warning for us is going, do not be the aggressor. Do not be the one that backhands. Okay, we got to keep going. Matthew 5:40. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. This is the equivalent of if someone is in possession of power and is suing you for something like non-payment or debt. And let's say they're going to sue you for your shirt. I mean, that's even a phrase in our world, right? They're going to take the shirt off your back, right? That's the idea, is that they're going to sue them. But Jesus says, if that happens, then give them your coat. Give them your, if they take your tunic, take your the coat. What Jesus is saying is going, back then, they only had two garments, the tunic and the cloak. So if I'm giving you both of those, I'm naked. I'm vulnerable. I have nothing. The warning here is a warning for those of us who practice greediness. You do not want to forget that there's a person on the other side when you are trying to gather your wealth and get possessions. That on the other side, you may leave someone completely naked and vulnerable. And that's not okay. If we are careless, and we live out of greed, a desire for more, a desire for wealth, we can reduce the poor to something that is so vulnerable that they can't recover. And we're blinded by that. God's kingdom flips the system of wealth and power on its head. We are to look after the poor, the destitute, the orphans, the widows. And we do this subversively by living generously and honoring one another with dignity. Being aware of others' needs and not putting our own desires and our own wants ahead of them. Being aware that what we do can actually place somebody in economic and social vulnerability if we are not careful. That's the warning. And so when he's saying, look, you don't want to be that greedy person. That is not kingdom. The final verse in this was, and if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. During this time, Roman soldiers had the right to force civilians to carry their equipment for 1 mile. But there was a limit. There was a strict law for the Romans that they could not let the person they asked carry their stuff more than a mile. So what Jesus says is, if they ask you to do a mile, do two. Go an extra mile. Contextualize this for a second. A civilian, a Jewish person, is asked to carry a Roman soldier's gear for a mile. Already, that seems horrible, to have to carry a pack on your back for a mile. Think about the social implications here. The Romans are occupying Israel. They are occupying their land. So it's not just that you're carrying somebody's stuff. You're carrying your offender's stuff. You're carrying the people who are oppressing you. You're carrying their stuff. So how is it? This is the hardest part for me as I sit in there and try and figure it out. How do you carry your enemy's gear? How are you supposed to do that? And then Jesus says, and then carry it an extra mile. What Jesus is getting at is going, look, yes, you may be oppressed, and this may not be fair. But what we do is we do it without grumbling, without a desire to, without revenge and plotting to kill them, right? It's like all the things you want to do, you need to not do that. Jesus is giving us a vision for something else, something so radical that even now I'm sitting there, I don't think I can do this, God. When I think about the people who I feel have offended me, and you're asking me to go an extra mile. What Jesus' call is to be subversive again, to extend more kindness, to remind them that you may have the permission and the authority to treat me like this, to treat me like a pack mule, and everyone else around me might be grumbling and angry and complaining and getting bitter, but the way of Jesus, the way of the kingdom, is to be ridiculously gracious and kind and merciful and loving. I'm saying that kind of a little bit like, I don't want to do that, right? But that's the reality of the upside down kingdom, is that that goes against my nature. That goes against the way that I was raised. That goes against what everybody else is doing Why am I called to extend kindness? Why am I called to extend mercy? Why am I called to extend love? Because that is the way of Jesus. And if we are going to be disciples of Jesus, followers of Jesus, if we're going to walk the narrow path, then we do things like Jesus does. As we look at all three of these scenarios, whatever situation you're in, the challenge is to think through this, to process with yourself and with God. What does it mean to reflect God's generous love? What does it mean to reflect God's generous love? Despite the pressure you're under, despite the people provoking you, despite your anger, your frustration, your humility, what does it look like to reflect God's gracious love? In the end, when we think through this, it's actually not about us. This whole teaching isn't about us. It's about the person sitting next to you. The people that you interact with on a daily basis, in your neighborhood, at the grocery store, at the schools, at workplaces, and beyond. Living as people of salt and light is never about ourselves. It's not about what I get out of it. It's not what how it benefits me. Living as people of salt and light is about reflecting the glory of God to the world. It's about reflecting the glory of God to the world. So that's the challenge this morning. Do we take the time to think through those things? I'm going to put a couple reflection questions up. And these questions may not even match what you thought when you stepped in and read the first five verses, right? Questions like this: have you treated anyone with disregard or disdain? Do you sense God calling you to advocate for those who are mistreated or marginalized? Are you struggling with greed, feeling that what you have is not enough? Is your gain coming at the expense of others' poverty or vulnerability? Do you sense God moving you towards a subversive practice of generosity? I'm going to give us some time to reflect on those questions, or questions that may be kind of welling up in you today as you sit and listen. And I'm going to ask the band to go ahead and come forward, and they'll lead us into a time of communion and a time of worship. But yeah, as you reflect on this, what I find, this is probably another sermon in itself, but as I was reflecting on this, and Jesus's teaching of these four passages, these four verses, Jesus never asked us to do something that he wasn't willing to do. This action seems ridiculous, right? To turn the other cheek, to carry another extra mile. But what in the last days did Jesus do? In the last days of Jesus, he was beaten. He was captured, he was beaten, he was put to trial. He was given a cross to carry to his death, and he carried that. The things that Jesus is asking us and telling us what the kingdom is about is what he is about and is what he is willing to do for us. And so when we get to come to the table and we remember Christ's body broken for us, his blood shed for us, it is an image and a picture of the very thing that he's been teaching from the mountainside for all of us who need that, who need a different kingdom than one of power and wealth, one of generous love, one of grace and mercy. Let me pray for us. Jesus, you are so good. Your way of living is, it feels impossible. For the way that we've been raised, for the culture that we live in, this seems impossible. But you call us to flip it upside down. You call us to trust in the one who has created us. You call us to be people of salt and light. And honestly, God, I don't know if I desire that or not. But I know that that is the call. And I know that there's no other way that I want to follow. And I pray that the same is for this community, that we would follow in your way. We would follow your path. We would live with generosity. We would live with kindness. We would live with mercy and grace, not for our sake, but for the sake of the world. We love you and give you our lives and pray that you would continue to lead us through the Holy Spirit. Amen.